The Education Gadfly Show starts now. Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man who has never once been in a football brawl, Rick Hess. Welcome, Rick.
Hey, Mike. I knew I should have gone to the University of Miami.
That's right. That's right. Rick, Election Day is right around the corner, and the politics are certainly heating up. Just today, Maryland's Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate, Michael Steele, was endorsed by former heavyweight boxing champion Mike Tyson. Tyson, who was once married to the candidate's half-sister, said he would, quote, even fight again to help Steele. Steele also received an endorsement from boxing promoter and legend Don King. Your thoughts about this,
Rick? If you've been endorsed by King and Tyson, he ran these commercials, if you remember, all summer about how he was going to be accused of hating puppies, and he said, actually, I love puppies.
Right. This is Steele, not Tyson, right? King. Yeah.
Anybody endorsed by Tyson King probably hates puppies. I bet Steele like carves up puppies and serves them at the backyard barbecue.
Ooh, ouch. And then, you know, you can put it on your George Foreman grill.
That was a boxing tie-in.
Did you see that? No, I didn't like that. All right.
Couldn't you see that? I could see Mike Tyson as like a serial murderer who was like carving up people and serving like, you know, left butt cheeks on a Foreman.
Right. Right. So bottom line is you don't think this is such a good move politically.
It's an interesting strategy. I'll give the cat that.
All right. Good, good, good. Well, you know what? We're going to be talking some more about all kinds of tragedies involving animal cruelty. If you have anything to say about that, send us a letter at letters@edexcellence.net. We would love to hear from you. Okay. Why don't we get going, Rick? We're going to start with a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we'll hear, of course, from our in-house weirdo, Liam, with his education news of the weird. And then we have a very special interview that will follow the news of the weird. So now we're going to play Pardon.
What kind of interview?
A special interview.
Oh, I thought you said a sexual interview. I was like, dude, I don't know that this is the right medium.
Yes, special. And this time I will let our listeners know we are actually interviewing a live person, not a computer. So
that actually came out better than it sounded in the studio, though, I got to give you.
Well, all right, good.
Careful cutting.
We'll have to find out if our listeners agree. All right. So, Jen, we're going to play Pardon the Gadfly. One thing to look out for, we're going to play something new this time. Rick, if you or I get overly wonky, Jen is going to issue the nerd alert so that we stop it. Okay?
Huh.
All right. You know, is that all you have to say about that, Rick? Our listeners should know, by the way, that Rick is actually calling into the show today. As far as we know, he is sitting at home in his boxers. But I hope you're not, drinking any of the sauce there, Rick, while you're doing the show.
No, and actually, I even freeze froze the Xbox, man. I'm like 100% engaged here, locked in. But the Nerd Alert thing, that takes me back to like ugly high school memories, man, when they used to beat my books down and hang me on a meat hook in the locker.
Wow, that's all very sad. You might want to get some help with that. Okay, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Dude, that was weak sympathy.
All right, guys. Topic one. The Los Angeles Unified School District hired a new superintendent, retired Navy Vice Admiral David L. Brewer. In tapping Education Outsider for the post, the LA School Board joins a slew of large urban districts with non-traditional school chiefs, Chicago, New York, and Philadelphia most notable among them. Few cities, however, have recruited military officers for the top post. Is tapping the military's top brass a good idea, Mike?
Well, I'm not so sure. Of course, it all depends on the person. Some of these retired military people have turned out to be pretty good superintendents. I don't know much about Brewer. It's certainly not a positive sign, though, that he didn't even talk to the mayor in Los Angeles. That would be Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. He didn't even talk to him on the phone before he took this job, even though, of course, the mayor now has partial control over the schools. To me, Rick, this shows that this guy might not be very politically astute, and that is a quality you definitely need to have in order to be a good superintendent.
Yeah, what was he thinking on that?
I don't know.
Huh. Part of it's going to depend, obviously, who he brings in as his education team. But this is all feels kind of very 1998, doesn't it? I mean, we were doing this with Becton in D.C. and Sanford in Seattle. You know what would be interesting is there's some really good coaches in the NBA and NFL and college ranks out there who would be really interesting suits. I'd like to see, say, Dallas ISD in Texas.
Right.
Say, hire Bill Parcells as their next soup.
Oh, that's interesting.
That would be a hell of a move.
So what do you know? So of course he would use all kinds of football analogies. You know, what would the running game be in terms of education?
Yeah, I don't really know. He might suck, but wouldn't that be just an interesting thing to see happen?
Okay, the buzzer doesn't seem to think so. But all right, Jen, what's the next topic?
All right, topic two. The Buffalo Board of Education has voted to base 10% of all students' grades on their attendance. Students with five or more unexcused absences will lose all 10 points, meaning the highest mark they can earn in any subject is a 90. In districts with major disciplinary and attendance problems like Buffalo, some kind of drastic measures seem necessary. But is this going too far? Should discipline and academic performance be tied together, or should they be strictly separated? Rick?
Nah, I mean, I'm fine with it. I mean, this idea that we want kids to show up and then it's somehow wrong to factor into the grade seems silly. The best part of this, I thought, was that I guess the final policy, they said, well, there's a bunch of acceptable excuses. We don't want to count against the kid. And it was stuff like approved field trips and college visits and illnesses in the family and then impassable roads, I guess because it's Buffalo. The best one, I thought, was that it's an excuse and doesn't hurt the kid if it's a required court appearance or an incarceration.
Wow. So I'm glad they don't get the 10 points docked for that, huh?
Exactly.
So,
the thing is, if you're going to be absent accidentally, you might as well make sure you're incarcerated.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty good. So if you have a note from your jailer, then I guess you're okay.
Yes.
Nice. Well,
at least you could forge. That would be a whole new kind of like forged permission slip.
Right. Right. All right, but back to the substance of this, though, Rick. I'm really torn on it. I'm not sure it's such a great idea. I mean, shouldn't grades really be focused all about achievement, whether or not the student knows material? And attendance is, of course, a means to an end, but it's not an end in itself.
I mean, but aren't grades everywhere? You went through teacher prep at your fancy UMichigan there.
Right.
I mean, teachers always factor in effort and, student cooperativeness and participation as part of a grade.
All right, that's
so
fair. But
showing off is part of those things?
All right, but participation and attendance are, of course, different things. That's all the time we got.
Really? It's tough to participate if you're not in attendance.
That's right. I agree with that. But it shouldn't be enough just to be in attendance.
You should have to participate. But it's not okay to factor that in as one tiny piece of the grade?
We're out of time. Okay.
All right.
Nerd alert, baby.
We are moving on to the final topic. Tom Lovelace over at Brookings came out with a new report illustrating that countries with students who are happiest in math class, i.e. that they are confident and teachers make the lessons relevant, have lower scores than students in dour nations. Also, he says that there's no NCLB-driven race to the bottom. Mike, what can we derive from Lovelace's report?
Well, our good friend Tom Lovelace, you know, this argument he has about the race to the bottom, he says that the race to the bottom started long before No Child Left Behind, and anyways, states are doing very well on NAEP, National Assessment of Educational Progress in math, so maybe there's not even a race to the bottom. I don't buy it. And he doesn't dispute that in reading, at least, states are making a lot more progress on their own tests than they are on the national tests, and that's accelerated under No Child Left Behind. So I'm just not buying what Tommy's selling.
Nerd alert!
Thank you.
I even spelled out National Assessment for Educational Progress, Jim.
I'm going to try to get this back out of the geekosphere here, Mike.
Okay.
I think there's two important context points here.
Yes, sir.
One is, I just hope all our listeners know that Tommy L. is a beautiful human being, a thoughtful guy. He can cook a mean lasagna. And I think that carries points independently of everything else. And second, not only are his annual Brown reports thoughtful and provocative and well-written, but everybody should make sure they have one on their shelf because they're beautifully bound. They have these wonderful color schemes on the cover, and they really are a testament to a thoughtful job of making the product something you want to hold on to.
Rick, substance, Rick, substance.
I have never wished I had a vacuum cleaner sucking up sound more than that little thing right there.
I know. What has Tom been buying you drinks at happy hour, Rick? What's going on?
I think, we got to take care of our own, baby.
What you don't want to say is that, come on, this information that students in happy nations score worse, this information's been around for years. And all Loveless is doing is repackaging it. Isn't that what you want to say?
I do want to say that whoever jotted down Jen's script spelled Dower, which should be spelled D-O-U-R, as if the Dow Jones had taken a shower. So they spelled the D-O-W-E-R. I thought that was kind of funny.
Good. All right. Still, Rick Hess ducking the questions. Aren't we out of time yet?
I already buzzed.
All right. Whew, that is it for Part of the Gadfly. Thank goodness. Now it is time for everyone's favorite education news of the weird.
Whoa. Rick. Don't we usually go to the interview at this juncture?
Yes, we do, Rick. Very good. But you were not paying attention earlier when I said that this time we are going to go to News of the Weird first and then have the interview afterward.
We're shaking it up.
We are shaking it up. May we proceed, Rick?
I like that.
All right. Liam, Mr. In-House Weirdo, tell us what is weird this week.
What's weird, Mike, is the goings-on at K-12 Indus School, just west of International Falls, Minnesota, where Principal Wade Pillaud recently shotgunned two kittens on campus. Pillaud wrote to the Minneapolis Star Tribune, quote, "I am not a cat hater," unquote. You see, the principal, who often lives in a mobile home on campus because his permanent house in Black Duck is over 100 miles away, was battling vermin. According to the Star Tribune, quote, "Pillaud had set conibear traps, which are designed to kill an animal by squeezing its body between steel jaws," unquote, around school grounds.
Sounds like a cat lover to me.
One day, he found a dead mother cat in one of his traps. Her two kittens were nearby. Pillaud then did the only reasonable thing. He retrieved a 28-gauge and blasted the kittens. When the incident came to light, Pillaud found himself in a pack of trouble, facing the possibility of felony possession of a firearm on school property. He has resigned.
Oh, man. Now there's a school with an original gangster as a principal.
So, Rick, I want to know, what do you think is worse, the principal shooting kittens on school grounds or the teacher who brought her students to go dig up graves that we heard about last week?
Now, Mike, you're a cat lover. You got two adorable kittens.
I do.
What the heck was this guy thinking? That he couldn't just pick up the kittens and find somebody to take them home?
I know. It just makes me really angry when I think about Bucky and Bitsy. I'm just glad they're not listening right now because I don't think they can handle it. I'd be very upset.
Liam, do we have any clue what this guy was thinking?
Well, I mean, he said he did it out of, you know, good intentions, that the cats or the kittens wouldn't have survived without their mother.
Especially not if he shoots them with a 28-gauge shotgun. He might have had a better odds if he'd taken them home and given them a little bit of milk.
I don't know.
Wow. All right. Well, you know what? We are not the only ones with views on this issue. We have a special interview this week to provide some extra context and perspective. So let's go ahead and take a listen. We're here today with Dan Patton, a researcher for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Dan is going to talk to us about the recent incident out in Minnesota whereby a teacher shot a couple of kittens on school grounds. Dan, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Dan, tell us, from your perspective at PETA, is this something that you see a lot of? I mean, does stuff like this happen quite often, or is this really out of the ordinary?
This is thankfully very rare. The majority of the problems that we run into in education settings involving animals are animals in classrooms, you know, the so-called classroom pet and so forth in grade schools. But thankfully, we don't see educators at any levels typically taking into their hands, animals in this matter, as this fellow is accused of doing in Minnesota.
So that's good. So we don't have a lot of hamsters that are being shot to death on school grounds.
No.
Okay. Now, you know, in the press accounts of this incident, the principal says that he was acting on pure motives. He denied being a cat hater, saying that he had cats himself, but that the kittens were in danger. The mother had died. They were starving to death, and he didn't want them to suffer.
Right.
So, I mean, what do you think? I mean, PETA has in the past supported mercy killing to some degree. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Well, we support euthanasia, which of course is a proper humane death, which gunshot doesn't qualify as. I think the interesting thing to note is, regardless of his intentions, and they may have been very good, The point is, unfortunately, is that those animals were apparently in danger because their mother had died, right? Well, their mother had been trapped by this man himself, apparently, underneath the mobile home that he lives in on the school's property. So, you know, good intentions aside, this man, by his, you know, irresponsible trapping practices, placed these helpless animals in the position that he deemed necessary to answer with, you know, a couple blasts from a shotgun or a rifle. So,
yeah.
You know, bad situation, certainly not the best way to handle it.
Right.
Potentially a felony crime, and you know, just not a wise choice of actions all around, probably.
Right, right. Now, so what kind of euthanasia then would be more appropriate in this kind of situation? I mean, PETA. I guess, sure. I heard at one point is, you know, something about freezing kittens, and is that
about what?
Well, would you tell me that? There's something about that. If you put these kittens, what are the best methods for this sort of thing?
Well, animals are euthanized at good shelters and at, you know, veterinary clinics around the world, with a painless injection of a variety of drugs, all together, I think, called sodium pentobarbital.
All right, so Dan, let's take this up to 30,000 feet here. So in PETA's view, what do you think? Which is worse, shooting kittens like this or, say, I don't know, clubbing baby seals?
Wow. I think that they're equal. I don't see any reason to do either. There are alternatives to both. Neither is humane and neither is proper. We can get by without doing either. And
we understand that the PETA spokesman, Bruce Friedreich, at times, this is a quote, he says, "It would be really great if all these fast food outlets, slaughterhouses, these laboratories, and the banks who fund them exploded tomorrow." So now that sounds like pretty tough stuff. It sounds like in some ways almost eco-terrorism kinds of stuff. I mean, what do you think? Is there something in this case where you've got plans to go into that school in Minnesota and, you know, I don't know, put cherry bombs in the toilets or something? What do we need to do? You know, maybe run the guy's underwear up the flagpole? What's the best thing to do?
Well, the best thing to do, I think, is to gauge what that community feels. If they feel that this man is a good educator who is serving their students well, then I think that they need to let their officials know that. All the same, if they feel that what he is accused of doing was inappropriate and or criminal, then I think that they should let, you know, obviously a district supervisor or superintendent know, and B, let the county sheriff and or county attorney know about that. Yeah.
Wait, so are you saying that if the local community says that this is okay, that then PETA thinks it's okay that this guy's shooting kittens on school grounds?
No, we certainly don't. And we certainly encourage, you know, a criminal investigation and prosecution if that's what's warranted by, you know, the evidence. Having not been there, I don't know what the evidence is.
Yeah. Right.
Certainly, this is an action that deserves careful review and appropriate action.
Yeah.
But, you know, the man made a bad choice, no doubt about that, if this is what he really did, and he should be held accountable for it.
All right. Well, one last question again, Dan, again, back at the 30,000-foot view here. Now, we understand that Pamela Anderson, of course, is a very well-known spokesman for PETA. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now she's married to Kid Rock, who, of course, is a rock star. And, you know, other rock stars, you got Ozzy Osbourne, who famously bit the head off a bat, and Alice Cooper, who threw chicken into a crowd of fans to be dismembered. I mean, isn't this a little bit hypocritical to have somebody who's, I don't know, associating with rock stars be one of your spokespeople?
You know, any step that anyone wants to take, whether they're famous or not, to make the world a better place for animals is welcome. Certainly, none of us are perfect. None of us are pure. It's very difficult to live in today's world without causing some minute amount of animal suffering, whether it's through what you buy or who you step on your way to work and so forth. So, you know, I think that making the world a more humane and compassionate place for all creatures is our priority and is everyone's priority a lot more than nitpicking about, you know, hypocrisy on someone's personal life.
All right. Well, good. Well, Dan, thanks so much for coming on the show and for sharing your perspectives.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Very good, sir. Have a good day.
Great. You too. So, Rick, what do you think? Pretty interesting, huh? PETA definitely not in favor of what happened out there in Indus, Minnesota. Although, as far as I can tell, they're not big fans of, I don't know, classrooms having pet hamsters either. What do you take of all this?
I gotta say, I think PETA's standing on the right side of this issue. I think this gives that whole human capital question we're talking about, Mike.
Yep.
The principals who are blasting kittens on school grounds. are on the wrong side of the issue.
All right, but I want to know, you talk about human capital, does new leaders for new schools, do they have you know, some sort of part of their training where they talk about how it's inappropriate to shoot kittens on school grounds?
That's a good question. My hope would be that they are recruiting so thoughtfully that none of the people coming through NLNS would be inclined to blast a kitten on school grounds.
Yeah. Well, I think
that's a good question.
I think you're right, because you know what? Overregulation is not the answer, huh? Although you got to wonder if Minnesota, is going to pass a law that's I don't know, going to require sensitivity training around animals for all school principals. Well, Rick and Liam and Jen, that is all the time we have for this week. Thanks everyone for joining us. Listeners, don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at edexcellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.